Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Boy, here's that theme music. He ups his meds, I'm telling you. Welcome back, my friends. 6 minutes past the hour at the top of the program. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio. Beaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, AirAmericaRadio.com, and on CRN Digital on cable TV systems in 29 states. Welcome to our program. Andy Bernstein is with us. Andrew is the author of a new book, The Capitalist Manifesto. He also specializes in novels, objectivism, and business ethics with the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. And on Sunday night of this week, he will be on C-SPAN 2 at 10 p.m., speaking about his new book, The Capitalist Manifesto. Andy, welcome to the program.
Good to be back, Tom.
Great to have you here. Andrew, let's talk for a minute, actually let's talk for a segment here, about Social Security and Medicare.
Okay.
The people, we the people of the United States, got together and elected Franklin Roosevelt back in the 1930s. Well, we can just keep it to Social Security to begin with, because it came about at two different times. And Roosevelt said pretty openly that his agenda was all about the New Deal. He got reelected three times, in fact, based on this, and that we should have Social Security, that there should be a social safety net. And, in fact, Social Security, not retirement insurance, fully a third of the people receiving Social Security are not retired persons, but the disabled people, people who, you know, orphans, widows, things like this. I'm assuming that folks from I know that the conservatives and the Republicans have been fighting this ever since the 1930s when it was first proposed, and Bush is still trying to deconstruct it. I'm assuming you're opposed to it as well.
Oh, definitely, Tom. It's a violation of individual rights for a paternalistic government to essentially steal money from productive working individuals against their will. So I think it's immoral and unjust.
And yet, what do we do, Andy? I mean, we had a situation back in the 1930s where the leading cause of death during the winters of 33 and 34 among people who were over 50 was hypothermia or hunger.
Well, don't forget, the Depression, I mean, first of all, the Depression is caused by Hoover's unrelenting interventionist policies in the economy.
You're talking about the Republican President Hoover's six in a row massive tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires?
No. Hoover has a reputation for being a laissez-faire. He, in fact, was not. Coolidge, who preceded him, was basically a laissez-faire president who lowered taxes significantly. Hoover's policies relentlessly was statist, Tom, whether it was the Smoot-Hawley tariff or the
Smoot-Hawley was in response to all this.
But it was in large part what brought about the stock market crash and the depression. But
Smoot-Hawley was passed in 1930 after the stock market crash.
But the market responded to the realization that the tariff was coming, that Hoover was pushing for, and there was no way to stop it. But I think the main point is that government intervention does not create wealth. It does. It's socialist principles don't.
But we're not talking about creating wealth here, Andy.
Don't give people a higher standard of living. Tom, history shows us that the more laissez-faire a society is, the wealthier it is. Now, the more statist or socialist a society is, the poorer it is. If that weren't true, then Cuba and the Soviet Union would have been rich, and the United States would be poor, and that's not the case.
If that's the case, then why do we have why are we 24th in the world in terms of infant mortality? Why are we 27th in the world in terms of quality of life overall? Why are we so far down the line if laissez-faire is the best way to go? Why is it that when we were the most laissez-faire during the what you might call the golden era of the robber, you wouldn't call them the robber barons, but I would, the Gilded Age, that we had the most widespread poverty in the history of the United States?
Well, I question those statistics and those claims, Tom. First of all, I don't know, 24th, 27th, I haven't seen those statistics, but I'll say this. The countries that have the highest standard of living and the highest life expectancy and the lowest mortality rates in the United States and others are all the capitalist or semi-capitalist nations of Europe, North America, and the Asian.
I'm not arguing against capitalism, man.
All of them are close together.
Andy, I'm not here to say that I want the United States to become something, you know, that we should tomorrow morning imitate Fidel Castro in terms of the way that our government is run.
I know you're not a Marxist.
And I'm not even remotely suggesting that, but I do believe that if we collectively, if we the people collectively get together and say, you know, we would rather not live in, for example, I've done a lot of work in third world countries that are laissez-faire simply because the government has no means or ability to intervene, right? I mean, there's no money, there's no resources, the government is, a bunch of corrupt despots who are living off in the capital city in their mansions, and I'm working out in the countryside, and there is no government. It is absolutely laissez-faire. And you walk out the door in the morning, and there's, 20, 30 kids there with open sores and hands out begging. I mean, that's what laissez-faire brings, at least in my experience.
Well, I think you answered your own point. You called these rulers despots. That is, there's no political economic freedom there. I think the key difference between us, Tom, is that you believe in democracy, that is the will of the people or the majority, and I believe in the principle of individual rights, where individuals have inalienable rights, which neither the majority nor the government can interfere with. And in the
I actually believe in a middle point between the two.
But Tom, in the despotism as you're talking about, there's brutal dictators who suppress their people there's no protection of individual rights. You can't be an entrepreneur. You can't start your own company. You can't own your own land. The government seizes it from you. The countries you're talking about are military dictators, or the Mugabe's case, an old-fashioned Marxist dictator. There's no principle of individual rights in those countries. There's no political economic freedom. That's not laissez-faire. That's dictatorship.
Well, actually, that was my experience in India, which is the world's largest democracy.
Well, India is starting to move towards a more of a free market economy, and I think over the last 10 years, and I think consequently India is living...
Well, it's not so much a free market economy. They're starting to move toward just, taking our jobs.
But they're moving towards greater freedom in the economic sphere, which is very good for the Indians. The belief that...
Andy, let me just...
done well everywhere but in India?
No. We agree on a couple of these points here, Andy Burns. We're talking with Andrew Bernstein. He's with the Ayn Rand organization, AYNRAND.org. I mean, you and I agree on the fundamental that the ability to engage in free enterprise is a good thing, and it builds economies. And capitalism is not an evil thing in and of itself. What I'm suggesting is that you are, by arguing that we should do away with Social Security and we should do away with Medicare because they are violations of personal rights, I'm suggesting that you're overlooking the fact that we live in a society, that there is an us here. It's not all just me, and that we as a society have collectively agreed, and it's not called Marxism or socialism, and I don't consider it tyranny. We as a society have collectively agreed that we're going to put a social safety net under those among us who are the most vulnerable, because there are, 10-year-old kids who lose their parents, and there are people who lose who are incapable of caring for themselves, who don't have the intellectual capacity for whatever reason, or physical capacity to do so, and we're going to take care of those people. Why would you want to just walk away from them?
Well, there's two points I'd make. First of all, I don't agree, and other people don't agree, and we have the right to our money without the government stealing it from us. And second of all, for people who need help in a free society and a free market, it's not that they starve, it's that you have private voluntary charities who help people voluntarily with their own time, their own energy, their own money. They could even use rational persuasion to try to convince me and people who think like me to help them help the poor. The government doesn't help the poor. I mean, people living on welfare or on Social Security or, God forbid, need Medicaid, getting very meager support. I mean, if you let people...
At least they're alive.
Money, but, Tom, if you protect individuals' rights and let them keep their money, free men and women...
What if they don't have any money to begin with, Andy?
Free men and women can plan for their own retirement and medical care far better than the government can.
What if they have no money to begin with?
But like I said, in a free country, you have private charity. The welfare department has helped put private charities out of
business. So we should just trust the rich will take care of us.
But in a capitalist country, Tom, so many people are rich relative to what the living standards are in the non-capitalist countries. I mean, America has proven over and over again as the richest country because it's the freest country in the world to be an enormously generous, charitable, and giving country. Look at the American Red Cross. They're all over the world whenever there's some kind of disaster or earthquake.
Well, Andy Bernstein, you're in a very articulate way putting forward the argument that George Herbert Walker Bush put forward with his 1,000 points of light, that George W. Bush put forward back in the 1970s when he ran for Congress on the platform of doing away with Social Security.
Tom, you don't have to insult me by comparing me to
no, but I mean, you know, it's they're using the exact same logic
But the Bush
you say it well.
Yeah. I don't think they even understand it.
I agree with you. Andy Bernstein, he's going to be on C-SPAN 2 at 10 o'clock Sunday night talking about his new book, The Capitalist Manifesto. He works with the Ayn Rand Institute, AYNRAND.org. Andy, thanks for being with us today.
It's always good talking to you, Tom. Take care.
Ditto, Andy. Talk to you soon. 16 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann radio program, Truth and Common Sense in Broadcasting.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
Shake it up. And welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour, Tom Hartmann here, the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination, or at least an end to rigged voting machines and the, well, not even necessarily rigged. It's just the whole idea of privatizing our vote. I mean, what a stupid thing. You want a private, it's a... Everybody would get all upset if they privatized Yellowstone, but they don't mind privatizing our vote. In any case, forgive the rant. Coming up in the program today, we just had Andrew Bernstein. We're going to be talking about Alberto Gonzalez testifying before Congress later on. The color of your skin can still cause you trouble in this country. Is Karl Rove out of control and dominating the Republican Party? Why is the maid in your hotel spying on you? No, I'm not joking. Why do corporations want you and me to pay more of their taxes, and why is New Orleans being sold hook, line, and sinker to Saudi Arabia? All that coming up in the next couple of hours here through the program. Also in the third hour of our program, Greg Watson, the Vice President for Sustainable Development and Renewable Energy at the Massachusetts Technology Collaborative, will be with us for our Bioneers segment, bioneers.org program. Interesting little tidbit here. Voters will have another opportunity Tuesday. This is from a newspaper in Ohio, the Middletown Journal. Now, just consider this for a moment. Ohio, where George Bush supposedly won the presidential election by about 119,000 votes, even though the exit polls said that he lost overwhelmingly. This from Carlisle, Ohio. Voters will have another opportunity Tuesday in a special election to decide whether the city should have a combined fire and emergency medical services department with 24-hour staffing or continue as a volunteer fire department. Now, this is a big issue for a local community. Do we have a real fire department or do we have a volunteer fire department? And they had this thing on the ballot in November. And the real fire department part got voted down, presumably because it would involve a slight tax increase. Who knows? But it got voted down. In fact, as the article in the Middletown Journal points out, but this is the second time in 3 months this levy has been before voters. Last November, the levy was narrowly defeated. So why are they revoting it? Well, as we continue with the story in the Middletown Journal, Carlisle, Ohio. But those election results, that's November's, those election results were set aside due to voting irregularities from the new electronic touchscreen voting machines. More votes were cast than were registered voters in the city's Montgomery County precinct. You get this? There were more votes cast than there were voters, according to the Diebold electronic machines. So who contested the results? The city. They wanted their fire department. And they took it to court in the county court, Montgomery County Common Pleas Court. And the court on Tuesday ordered us, ordered today's special election. It's happening actually today. at Montgomery County's cost. Voters in the Warren County side of the city will be using new optical scan voting machines. If voters approve the continuing replacement and increase 3.8 mil, see, they've gone from touchscreen machines to optical scan machines. What they don't get is that in both cases, a private for-profit corporation is counting the vote. Even though there's a paper trail with an optical scan machine, it was an optical scan machine down in Leon County, Florida, that got hacked in that big demonstration that they had a few months ago. So the city of Carlisle, Ohio, saying, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, we lost the vote on the fire department, on having a fire department, but there were more votes than there were voters. So we want to have the election redone. Now, nobody's mentioning the fact that George W. Bush won in that election with more votes than there were voters. You tell me this thing isn't weird, out of control, sick, sad, insane, and out of their plumb minds. The greatest felony against democracy perpetrated on this country is the privatization of our vote. I'll tell you, they want to privatize Social Security. You know, I think it's a terrible thing, but, you know, we've only had Social Security since 1935, 1936. It's not in the Constitution. It's not the woof and weave. It's not the fabric of American democracy. It's an important thing. It's something we all want, but it's not the core of democracy. And we'll be taking your calls, by the way, on that issue and others. And also, Alberto Gonzalez. I got some audio here to share with you. Gonzalez, did you know that George Washington was all in favor of monitoring electronic communications? Yeah, he was in favor of electronic wire. In fact, he authorized them. George Washington. This is why the Republicans wouldn't put Alberto Gonzalez under oath. Alberto Gonzalez. The strangest attorney general, I think, that we have ever had. Our chief law enforcement officer. As the chief law enforcement officer, he should be looking into what's the deal in Ohio where you've got more votes than voters. But of course, you know, he won't. That's not going to be the issue. The New York Times, by the way, reporting, just to wrap up a little bit of the news of the day, reporting that the new Bush budget that's going to take a whack out of social services, out of programs for middle-income families and for working poor, and give that money as tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires. They're having a few breaks in the ranks. Norm Coleman, Republican from Minnesota, a little nervous. Judd Gregg from New Hampshire. Kit Bond of Missouri. Interesting. 27 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
So that's how it is. That's what we got. And if the president wants to admit it or not, you can read it in the paper, read it on the wall, hear it on the wind if you're listening at all. Get out of that limo and look us in the eye. Call us on a cell phone, tell us all why. In Dayton, Ohio, or Portland, Maine, or a cotton gin out on the great high plains. It's done closed down along with the school and the hospital and the swimming pool. Dust devils dance in the noonday heat. There's rats in the alley and trash in the street. Gang graffiti on a boxcar door. We can't make it here anymore.
That's the death of the American middle class at the hands of the conservatives, starting with Ronald Reagan's war on organized labor in 1981 when he broke the PATCO strike and declared the official conservative war on the working people of the United States. I'm sorry, the middle class is fighting back. We are starting to say, no, thank you, Mr. Reagan, Mr. Bush, for that matter, Mr. Clinton. Bill Clinton with his Telecommunications Act of 96 and NAFTA, GATT, and the WTO. No, thank you. These conservative economic policies, these conservative trade policies are absolutely insane. They are destroying the United States of America. And now, the guys who are carrying this stuff out, at the same time, They want to make sure that there's no dissent, that nobody's speaking up against this, whether it's hauling Cindy Sheehan out of the gallery of the United States House of Representatives for the State of the Union speech, or whether it's dragging Brett Bercy away because he's standing in a group of Republicans with all their We Love George Bush signs, and he's got a sign that says no oil for, no war for oil, or whether it is Republicans on the House, on the Senate Judiciary Committee, doing something serious about Alberto Gonzalez breaking the law, about George W. Bush breaking the law at the behest of Alberto Gonzalez. Here we have in Insight Magazine, sort of the sister publication, I suppose you could call it, of the Washington Times, both of them owned by the Reverend Moon, conservative publications. And InsightMag.com, the website, the question has been, since yesterday, why was it that Arlen Specter was so terrified to swear in Alberto Gonzalez? Why is it? Congress routinely swears in people before they testify before Congress. It's a normal thing. Why is it that Arlen Specter not only did not swear them in, but he didn't, there were two Republicans who weren't there, and he said he had the proxies, and Russ Feingold even challenged him. He says, I want to see these proxies. Prove to me that you've got the votes. And on a party-line vote, Alberto Gonzalez was allowed to speak before Congress and not be held accountable in the event of perjury.
Well, the question is, should the ruling of the chair be upheld that Attorney General Gonzalez not be sworn? The ayes have it.
Mr. Chairman, I request to see the proxies given by the Republican senators.
Well, we can rephrase the question if there's any serious challenge of the proxies. This is really not a very good way to begin this hearing.
No, it's not. So why did you do that, Arlen? Well, Insight Magazine gives us a little insight. The White House has been twisting arms, they write, to ensure that no Republican member votes against President Bush in the Senate Judiciary Committee's investigation of the administration's unauthorized wiretapping. In other words, we can have the appearance of an investigation. We can make it look like we're looking into this thing, but you damn well better not actually do anything. Because if you do, well, here's what happened. Congressional sources said Deputy Chief of Staff Karl Rove has threatened to blacklist any Republican who votes against the president. The sources said the blacklist would mean a halt in any White House political or financial support of senators running for re-election in November. A senior GOP congressional aide speaking on this, on the condition of anonymity said it's hardball all the way. Sources said the administration has been alarmed over the damage that can result from the Senate hearings. They said the defection of even a handful of Republican committee members could result in a determination that the president violated the 1978 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and such a determination could lead to impeachment proceedings. They go on to note, over the last few weeks, Mr. Rove has been calling in virtually every Republican on the Senate committee, as well as the leadership in Congress. The sources said that Mr. Rove's message has been that a vote against Mr. Bush would destroy GOP prospects in congressional elections. He, Rove, is lining them up one by one, another congressional source said. Karl Rove, the invisible hand. Those deemed disloyal to Mr. Rove would appear on his blacklist. The source said dozens of GOP members in the House and Senate are already on that list. So far, only a handful of GOP senators have even questioned Mr. Rove's tactics. Yeah. So now we know why, and then Gonzalez comes out with these just absolutely inane responses. George Washington was in favor of electronic surveillance.
I gave in my opening statement some of the examples where President Washington, President Lincoln, President Wilson, President Roosevelt have all authorized electronic surveillance on a far broader scale, without any kind of probable cause.
Without any kind of probable cause, George Washington was using electronic surveillance. Where? He was getting laid in jars. See, back in 1752, Ben Franklin discovered electricity, and he stored it in these giant capacitors called Leyden jars, the early form of what today is called a capacitor. And must have figured out some way to convert those things into a wiretap so that they could spy on folks, right? Makes sense to me. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number, 866-440-TOM, T-H-O-M. And Steve in Springfield, Massachusetts, listening on WHMP. Hey, Steve, welcome.
Yeah, hi, how are you doing? I hate to see Andrew Bernstein get away with Europe in his quiver of arrows. He cites that the highest standard of living is in the capitalist countries, you know, Europe, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
Excuse me, Europe is highly mitigated capitalism. They are social democracies. Only the former satellite states of the Soviet Union are developing in an oligarchic form such as ours. This is just total crap for him to cite Europe. We're not one-tenth of the way in the direction. We were maybe one-tenth of the way in the direction 30 years ago.
Yeah, between 1935 and 1980, yeah, absolutely. And the amazing thing, Steve, is conservatives will say that capitalism is a political system and try to conflate it with democracy. And the fact of the matter is that the social democracies, the democracies of Europe, and I lived in Germany for a year, I can tell you from firsthand experience, where I could literally, you could walk into a doctor's office and just show your ID card and boom, get whatever service you want, hospital, anything, instant, very easy, very fast, not to mention, you know, a great social infrastructure, good social safety net, all these kinds of things, those people decided that they were going to regulate capitalism in a way that worked for society by democratic vote, by and large. Now, the one exception to that is Germany and Japan. You'll recall, after World War II, Harry Truman, in 1946, the House went Republican and the Senate went Republican in the election of 46. And that's why in 47, when the House and Senate passed Taft-Hartley to allow states to opt out of the Wagner Act and bust up unions on a state-by-state basis, Harry Truman vetoed that act, but the Republicans overrode his veto. That same year, Harry Truman also introduced national health insurance, a single-payer, Medicare-like for all national health insurance program, and they shot that down. So when the Marshall Plan got put together, Harry Truman said, we're going to do in Germany and Japan what I have been suggesting we do in America, and I'm going to show you that it's going to work. And so we had in Germany and Japan, they have strong protections of labor, which I call democracy in the workplace. The workers actually have a say in the workplace. They have strong environmental protections. They operate on the precautionary principle. They have national health care for all. And guess what? Two of the four largest economies in the world are Germany and Japan. And so when the neocons took over Iraq, they said, well, we'll show you that our way works better. And Paul Bremer goes in and illegally, violating the rules of the Hague Conventions and the rules of the Geneva Conventions, goes in and rewrites the Iraqi Constitution to create a flat tax of 15% to allow corporations to own anything. They can totally expatriate profits, take all their profits out of the country. They can bring in foreign workers from anywhere at any price and compete with Iraqi labor. And the result, 50% unemployment in Iraq, and the Iraqis hate us. And, you know, surprise, surprise. I absolutely agree with you, Steve. Well said. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Good hearing from you. Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Gary.
Good morning, Tom. I also take strong exception with your guest's comments. His philosophy is just another clear indication that demonstrates this huge philosophical divide we have of what government should or should not be.
But this is why I think, Gary, and this is why I put folks like Andy on, and frankly, I got to say, you know, the Ayn Rand organization, the Ayn Rand Institute, of all the right-wing think tanks out there, they're the only ones who are actually honest about what they're up to. I mean, Andy will come right out and say he doesn't believe in democracy.
I understand that.
And you get these guys on from the Competitive Enterprise Institute and whatnot, and, you know, they'll try to weasel around things, and, the Republicans.
Yeah, you're doing the right thing there.
Yeah. Yeah, I want people to hear this debate, and I want them to hear honestly how these folks are thinking.
I would just like to add this, too. And I'm actually saying this to him, and this is their philosophy. I think he's wrong. Doesn't mean we're not listening to him. But is it a great country if we are the most violent industrialized nation on the face of the earth? Are we a great country when we have no version of national health insurance? Are we a great country when we're 49th in education and 8th in life expectancy? Are we a good country there?
No, your points are absolutely well taken, Gary, and I make them regularly with Andy and others.
Thanks
from there. Yeah, you're welcome. I'm pleased to take your call, and you know, we need to continue these debates, and tragically, there's a lot of conservatives who just won't come on the program because, you know, we require a certain level of honesty here on this program. You're listening to the Radio Support Group, up by 4, We the People. It's 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm just another poor boy out to find a rich man's boy.
Welcome back, my friends.
My man, an eagle and a flag tattooed on his arm. Red, white, and blue, to the moon will land in Kandahar. I left behind a pretty young wife and a baby girl. I stack overdue bills and went off to save the world. It's been a year now, he's still there. Chasing ghosts in thin dry air. He went back at home to find his cousin took his car. He's just another poor boy off to find a rich man's boy.
9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. I got some, in fact, David, would you grab that letter over there and hand it to me? Got a letter and some photos from a listener. From a woman who's listening on WPTBT, Lori Cardall, I guess it is, in Pittsburgh, who dropped by Walter Reed and took some photographs, part of a program, I think, with Pittsburgh filmmakers. I don't have all the details on this, but I got to say, some photos of some of our soldiers, with their permission and all this. She said, I was honored to meet these noble young men, and they allowed me to take these intimate photographs, and I looked at them, and I almost cried. Just these pictures of these tragically wounded and disfigured young men, and you look at that. In fact, I yesterday showed them to one of the senior executives here at the radio station where I do a morning show, which is owned by Clear Channel, and who's a Republican. And she looked at it for a minute, and I said, "It's a real war," and she kind of sadly shook her head, and she said, "Yeah, I guess it really is a real war." Joe in Texarkana, Texas, thanks for calling. Hey, Joe, what's up?
All right. Yeah, here's the thing with the Social Security.
Yeah.
If you do away with Social Security, and if it actually works the way they say it will, which I doubt, somehow trusting the rich people to give money to the poor leaves me.
It didn't seem to work in the 19th century. It didn't work in the first part of the 20th century. It didn't work until we got Social Security. And those boring bureaucrats with the green eye shades have never once missed sending out a Social Security check. So, you know, I'm willing to trust the system, frankly.
Well, if it had worked, we wouldn't need these programs, would we?
There you go. There you go.
We wouldn't have them.
Well,
now, here's
said,
the
Joe.
Problem with it is that when you do it that way, you put those people in a situation of begging from the rich. And if they get the money from the rich, then see the rich get to feel good about it. What you're doing is you're taking away these people's dignity, which I think should be part of the Democratic platform.
No, I absolutely agree with you, Joe. And in fact, in 1936, in July of 1936, when Franklin Roosevelt issued his acceptance speech for his nomination for his second term as president, he quoted an old judge. I forget the judge's name. He said, "A necessitous man is not a free man." In other words, if you don't know where your next meal is coming from, and you might be thrown out of your house, you can talk all day long about how you've got political freedom, but you're not free. Sorry. Joy in Cincinnati, Ohio. Hey, Joy.
Hello.
Thanks for calling.
I've watched quite a bit of the Gonzales hearing, and I've been angry ever since because he didn't go under oath. And I consider that a sham.
Yeah. Sham is a gentle word, Joy.
If you don't go under oath, I mean, who else can go to court without going under oath?
I know. And if you go to court, Gonzales is the chief law enforcement officer in America. Try going into a court and saying, "Hey, Mr. Prosecutor, your boss, Alberto Gonzales, doesn't have to go under oath. Neither do I."
Yeah, and it seems like that this administration, they're never held accountable for anything they do. I just came back from the library, and, I like this website, BuzzFlash.
Yeah.
Because you can find out a lot.
BuzzFlash.com.
Helen Thomas asked McClellan a pretty tough question about, she said, I forgot exactly what it was now, about the wiretapping, and kind of put him on the spot. you know.
I actually here's the clip. Here's the clip of that, Joy. Thanks for a perfect segue, and thank you for the call.
I don't think he should obey the law. He put his hand on the Bible twice to uphold the Constitution. Wiretapping is not legal under the circumstances without a warrant.
Well, I guess you didn't pay attention to the Attorney General's hearing earlier today.
Scotty McClellan
walked through very clearly the rationale behind this program.
Responding to Helen Thomas.
I think you have to ask, are we, well, he's not, are we a nation at war?
That's not the question.
No, that is the issue here.
The point is, there are means for him to go to war, get a warrant, just spy on people.
Enemy surveillance is critical to waging and winning war. It's one of the traditional tools of war. And the Attorney General outlined very clearly today how previous administrations have used the same authority and cited the very same authority. And we're going to continue doing everything we can within our power to protect the American people. This is a very different circumstance, and you know that.
No, I don't.
She says, you know what happened to Nixon when he broke the law? Oh, this is a very different circumstance, and you know that. No, I don't. Chris in Dallas, Texas, we just have 30 seconds. Quick comment?
Yeah, real quick, although I held for quite a while. Hey, listen, I agree with you with your economic guest, but I agree with your point of view. I'm in six-figure income. My wife is in six-figure income. We pay a lot of tax. But the thing about it is that we're socially responsible. We get a lot of taxes out of our checks or out of our income. But my biggest point is, it's the utter sickness of the greed of this country, of people who have that kind of philosophy that it has. I go by the Clinton philosophy, basically, let the rich get richer, yes, but let the middle class get richer. Let the poor.
I agree with you. Well said, Chris. Well said. And in fact, it was Lyndon Johnson's war on poverty that brought an entire generation of people out of poverty. He cut poverty in half in 4 years and brought an entire generation into the middle class, or a good chunk of one. And I would gladly pay Clinton's taxes to have Clinton's economy. 57 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, is George Bush above the law? He certainly seems to think so. MoveOn.org is running a hard-hitting new ad about this. George W. Bush, they come right out and say he's breaking the law. We need a special prosecutor. We'll get to that a little later on in the program. An awful lot going up. Why is the maid in your hotel spying on you? Seriously, there's an article about it in today's Wall Street Journal. And the hotel industry seems to think it's a fine idea that they write down what you didn't eat from room service, for example. That and other strange things. But first, the ACLU in New Mexico is defending an employee of the Veterans Administration who has been attacked by this Bush administration for simply exercising her right of free speech, as far as I can tell. Peter Simonson is the executive director of the ACLU New Mexico, and he's on the line with us. Peter, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you here with us, Peter. Give us the thumbnail sketch here, the background on this story.
Sure. Back in September of last year, a VA employee, she's a clinical nurse specialist named
Laura
Berg.
Now, this would have been a month before the elections?
That's correct.
Okay.
Roughly that timing. She sent a letter into a weekly newsletter, news magazine here in Albuquerque called The Alibi, and in it she criticized the government, particularly the Bush administration, for the way it's handled the Katrina disaster and the Iraq War. And not long after that, two information security employees from the Veterans Administration showed up at her office, handed her an investigative memorandum, and seized her computer. And they took the computer away, analyzed the hard disk, month or so later, she was informed that they uncovered no information to suggest that she had used that computer for the purpose of producing the editorial that she'd published. And moreover, the government, the particular person who was conducting the investigation, he's the chief of human resources for the VA here in New Mexico, Mel Hooker, informed her that despite not finding anything on the hard disk, they were justified in conducting the investigation because they were required to investigate all possible actions of sedition.
Sedition?
That's the word they used.
You know, I remember the alien, well, I don't remember, but I certainly learned about the Alien and Sedition Acts that John Adams got passed back in 1798 that allowed him to throw newspaper editors in prison, and in fact imprison Matthew Lyon, the congressman from Vermont, for speaking out against the president. I didn't, and I know that Woodrow Wilson brought this back in some small part during World War I. Tell us what the crime of sedition is right now. What's the legal definition of it these days, and how is that law typically used?
Well, I mean, I think you don't hear much about sedition these days because the law isn't used. It isn't a sort of an arcane artifact of our legal structure. And what it means is for someone to incite the unlawful overthrow of the government. It is a crime, and it involves inspiring criminal activity.
So, for example, if somebody on a radio program like this were to, instead of calling for political change, which is what I always do, were to suggest that people should run out in the street, grab their guns, and mount an armed uprising against the government, which would be not only stupid but pointless, but nonetheless, if somebody were to suggest that, that would be the definition of sedition. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it would rise to the level of consideration as possible sedition, but I think, given the context, even then, you would have to look at it carefully, and it would be a question for the courts.
So here, a woman wrote a letter encouraging political action, encouraging people. This was a month before the November 2004 elections, and basically being critical of the Bush administration.
Right.
And she happened to be an employee of the Veterans Administration, and so the Bush administration came down on her like a ton of bricks.
Well, it's pretty shocking. I mean, imagine here's a woman who is just trying to be a good citizen and participating in the sort of democratic dialogue that takes place in our country, and the next thing she knows, her office computer is being taken away from her, and for weeks on end, she doesn't know if she's going to lose her job. She doesn't know if this is going to stain her professional career. She doesn't know if this is going to inspire some sort of lengthy Homeland Security investigation into her life.
Well, and you know, if Karl Rove's previous activities are any indication, if any member of her family has anything in their past that they wouldn't want made public, whether it's being a CIA agent or having smoked dope when they were 16, it's going to appear in the newspaper next week.
Yeah, I mean, and those are, I guess, the possible outcomes. I think the legal potential there for messing up her life and encumbering her life with drawn out, unnecessary inspection of her personal affairs is really the danger in a situation like this. And you know, who knows what has transpired after this investigation of her computer, whether she's been under further surveillance simply because of exercising her First Amendment rights. And in order for us to figure that out, we will be submitting a Freedom of Information Act request with the Veterans Affairs Administration, with the Veteran Affairs, to see what else they've said about her in correspondence between high-ranking officials.
Well, and in fact, it's not just her First Amendment right. If you read the Declaration of Independence, I realize it's not one of our legal documents, it's our founding document, but it's one of her obligations.
Exactly.
to speak out against a government that she considers to be acting inappropriately. Now, this is an administration that unabashedly says, proudly says, that they can wiretap us, they can spy on Americans without warrants, they don't have to worry about any oversight from any court. We've had the Attorney General yesterday and today speaking before Congress defending this practice. This is an administration that in Denver, when George W. Bush was giving his speech, asked absolutely silent, quiet, respectful people who happen to be in the audience listening to him talk about Social Security to leave the room, leave the building, and in fact forced them out of the building because a half a mile away, their automobile had a bumper sticker on it that said "No War for Oil." This is an administration that hauls Cindy Sheehan out of the House, you know, the House Representatives during the State of the Union speech because of the contents of her T-shirt. Where does it stop? Where are we going?
Yeah, you know, if I just might add, you're talking about national level events, but this most recent experience with the Veterans Administration is just reflective of a larger crackdown on free speech that we're seeing around the state of New Mexico, oftentimes being handed down from the highest ranks of the federal government, but we're even seeing it replicated within state government as they sort of pattern themselves after the federal model.
But I thought Bill Richardson was a fairly progressive guy. He's the governor there. He's a Democrat.
Well, you know, it cuts both ways with the governor, I have to say, and we have had to intervene, unlike in previous administrations, we've now had to intervene three times to remind cabinet secretaries that their employees do have a First Amendment right to speak to their legislators in their own individual capacity and cannot be told that they have no ability to participate in the legislative process here in New Mexico, which is going on at this very moment. So, you know, I think in general there's a growing intolerance for freedom of expression and dissent towards the government's policies. Certainly you've seen that in other states with the spying that's gone on in the anti-war movement. We've experienced some of that ourselves right here. And the Veterans Administration has also come up on our radar screen. We currently have a case against the Veterans Administration for prohibiting Veterans for Peace, a veterans group, from actually conducting a memorial service on National Cemetery grounds, a peaceful, solemn, non-political memorial service on National Cemetery grounds to recognize their fellow combatants, their fellow soldiers who've fallen in combat, and they're told that they can't do that. Why is the government closing these spaces for that have traditionally been held open for free speech?
We're talking to Peter Simonson, the executive director of the ACLU of New Mexico. Peter, we have less than a minute left. It seems that the Bush administration's suspension of civil liberties in the name of the war on terror is being picked up by nations from China to Burma as a rationale to crack down on their people. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is that the same thing is creeping. It's happening at state and county levels.
Absolutely. I mean, as I say, I think it's fair to say that this seems to be coming from the highest levels of government and trickling down even to a little state like New Mexico, where we don't have a lot of population and we don't get the kind of news that the East Coast and the West Coast does, but we're experiencing those very same effects right here in New Mexico, as I've described. This most recent experience with Laura Berg is just the most recent example.
Is she gonna keep her job with the Veterans Administration?
Well, we're gonna fight to make sure that she does, and I will have to say that Senator Bingaman has also taken an interest in this issue, and today is sending a letter of request to the Veterans Affairs Secretary asking him to investigate the matter.
The whole gestalt of this thing really should be concerning all Americans. This is such a danger to democracy. Peter Simonson of the ACLU in New Mexico, ACLU.org, the website. Peter, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And for the good work, the good and important and vital work that you guys are doing. It's 16 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Robot dog, tell me, live in the moment. Don't get too far ahead, don't live in the past. I think my eyes and the moment is over. I guess another day has passed. But it's just another day.
And welcome back to the place where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Well, fiendishly plot for clean voting machines. And Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service with us, talkradionews.com, speaking from deep within the belly of the beast in Washington, D.C. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, yes, I am in the belly, or at least, I don't know, I'm basically in the roof, because I'm right in the roof of the Capitol building. I don't know what we call that.
Oh, that's great. Oh, and by the way, say hi to our new listeners on WHMP, Springfield, Massachusetts, our newest affiliate.
Hi, delighted you joined.
Indeed. So what's happening in Washington, D.C. today?
Well, reaction to yesterday's budget announcement by President Bush, a couple of things going on, various secretaries appearing before the committees to which they're responsible saying why they need the money, and then the senators are just starting what is going to be an interminable length of press conferences saying why this thing is good, why this thing is not good. I attended a press conference with Senator Tom Harkin just a little while ago, who is apoplectic about cuts to education and health care, and people with disabilities, the working poor, people on fixed incomes, cancer patients. He gave the example. In fact, he had a young woman there who is being helped by the Upward Bound program, which basically helps kids who are quite bright but whose family life is impossible and are getting no help from anywhere else. And this young woman told her story, and the entire program is being eliminated.
Oh, my.
It's just
Tough. We have to make room for tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, Victoria. You have to understand. I mean, these are the folks that put George W. Bush and Republicans into office, and their tax breaks, even if it means slamming the poor, even if it means borrowing money in the names of our children and our grandchildren, those tax cuts have to be preserved. They are the most important thing in America.
Well, it's going to be interesting. If the people who aren't getting them actually do show out to vote, we might find out whether one man, one vote means something.
By the way, how'd you like to make $1,000, Victoria Jones?
Yes.
Okay. Democrats.com, Bob Ferdix, Democrats.com is offering a $1,000 reward to any reporter who can successfully ask George W. Bush the following question.
Go on. Quote,
how can you claim you were trying to avoid war through the UN when you told Prime Minister Blair on January 31, 2003, that if you fail to get a resolution from the UN authorizing war, quote, you said, military action would follow anyway, end quote, including a scheme to paint a U.S. spy plane in U.N. colors to provoke an Iraqi attack on the U.N. itself?
Well, that actually is on my list, funnily enough.
Good.
But it had to take second place to the question I asked yesterday about Abramoff, because I've been meaning to ask the question for a week. So it did actually have to take second place. And, of course, nobody is asking the question because nobody reads any papers from overseas. But of course, they will claim that the whole painting planes in UN colors was a joke. But then I guess it was a joke to blow up Al Jazeera, too.
Yeah. Well, it clearly wasn't a joke. And I was in the UK over the weekend. I was in London this last weekend.
Were you?
And yes. I flew out Thursday after I got off the air. And, in fact, it's why we didn't have a conversation on Friday.
You're a jet setter.
Yeah, I guess.
That's a long flight, isn't it?
It is.
It'll be 12 hours, I think.
Yeah, something like that. It was
wow.
In any case, I mean, this is being taken very seriously in Europe, I can tell you. It's being taken very seriously.
Yeah, it's just not taken seriously at all here. It's like it's a joke.
It's not even being discussed here.
No.
So Democrats.com is offering a $1,000 reward to any reporter who can successfully ask that question to Bush, not McClellan,
well,
but to Bush.
Well, I can't ask that question to Bush because he'll never call on me, so that's never going to happen.
Well, I know you're always there with your hand up. Maybe you'll hit the jackpot.
I know.
Maybe you'll get lucky. Okay, we'll see what happens.
But I'll try.
All right, what else is happening in Washington, D.C. today, Victoria Jones?
Well, that's really pretty much it. I mean, Gonzalez appearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee yesterday is still reverberating, I would say, around all the halls, because the senators are still in shock that they were led as astray as they were led yesterday in terms of the answers to the questions. So I think that's really going on. The only other big event is that Donald Rumsfeld was up before the Senate Armed Services Committee to say why he needs the money he needs. It seems like it was fairly cordial. And Senator Schumer is actually going to hold a press conference in a couple of minutes about the escaped Yemeni prisoners, because he's ticked off that they're being held in Yemen and not being held somewhere that might be a little bit more secure.
Yeah. Now, Don Rumsfeld, he has said that we now have to be prepared to fight the long war, capital L, capital W, and that this could last as long as the Cold War. He has completely reframed this thing. Is that